Beis Mar Cheshvan, Sunday the 22nd of October, Dan Yehoshua Posen, Hilchus Vivis. This week's Torah Way has been sponsored by family Steinbock on the occasion of the wedding of their daughter Gabriella Steinbock to Eitan Freilich today. Mazel Tov.
Good morning. Pleasure to be back. Big mazel tov to Benji Steinbock. Baruch Hashem should begin the day with the Torah and go on with him to Mitzvah Samaisim Tovim. Number of years ago, we learned together through various different halachas in Hilchus Ribbis. And really today, what I wanted to do was a little bit of chazor, a little bit of reminding ourselves of the most frequent issues which come up. And if we have time, then we'll also go through a particular shaila. This week's parasha, Avram, Lech Lecha Me'aretzecha, Avram Avinu is taken out from his comfort zone, so to speak. And I feel that sometimes when a person goes into the office or gets involved in financial matters, it's almost as if, Chas V'Shalom, can say the couple is left, you know, by the door. It's almost as if we're not constantly aware of the fact that we have to be vigilant, that there might be halachic shailas that are involved. It seems to be a straightforward transaction. It should be fairly straightforward. On the contrary, we're focusing on the financial aspect of it, and we don't always stop to think and analyze if there's a problem. I'm going to run through probably the five most frequent issurim which come up on a regular basis, and whenever they come up and they get highlighted, often in the middle of the case, then invariably the parties will say, why don't Rabbanim speak about this? Why don't they tell us more about this? And the truth is, we do and we've tried, but therefore, that's why today, maybe as we're about to enter into the winter months when people get down more to the regular business matters, then this is a good time to remind ourselves. The first shaila, and again, I'm not going to get into the kishkas of each of these shailas. I think we've had a separate shi'ur on each of these topics with the different solutions for them. This is more to remind ourselves, and maybe if I can request to be a little bit more proactive. What I mean by proactive is that often you go to a shi'ur and you hear a particular subject, and if there's anything it triggers in your mind at that particular moment, then well and good. And you should know, often as a maggid shi'ur, you can see when that moment is, you know, when someone all of a sudden wanders off, you know, which is good, Baruch Hashem. But often, an hour later, a day later, a week later, you might come across that actual scenario and you're not thinking about it because you're not thinking this is actually a situation which we're dealing with. So if I can request, maybe at the end of this year, each person, whether here or watching otherwise, can do a shikul cheshbon nefesh if they have any of these scenarios at all, because you'd be amazed how frequently they come up, whether with ourselves, with our children, with our parents, etc. The first shaila is one which we've mentioned many, many times before, and it is probably the most frequent scenario of Hilchus Ribbis in England today, and that is the situation of a person purchasing a property which is not in their name. It is in either a parent's name or a child's name, and the mortgage is taken out in either the parent's or child's name for various different reasons, which we're not going into now. And the mentality is, if let's say you take a couple buying their first time their first property, their home, first home, so they can't get the mortgage, or they're not buying the mortgage in their name, so the parent purchases the property in his name, or their names, and really it's understood and agreed that it's owned by the children. And we're talking about where it is understood and agreed that it's owned by the children. Sometimes there can be a separate trustee, sometimes there can be a verbal discussion and agreement that it's owned by the children. In such a situation, the way that the halacha looks at it, and it starts with you with the Gemara and Shulchan Aruch and Sekelim, the way the halacha looks at it is like this. The parent, let's pick simple figures, a property is worth £1 million, 200,000 is the down payment, 800,000 is the mortgage. So the down payment either the children have themselves or they've been gifted by parents with autonomy, that's irrelevant right now. The down payment is the children. The 800,000 is the mortgage from the bank. So the parent goes to the bank. He officially is buying, she is buying the property in their name. They're borrowing 800,000 against the property. But they are also personally liable for the loan. And that is the nukuda. Because they are also personally liable for the loan, the way the halacha looks at it is, the bank is lending £800,000 to the parent. when the parent in turn is lending that £800,000 to the child. Now sometimes the parents or the children say, why? When did that halvor happen? When did that? I didn't borrow £800,000. And the answer to that is simple. If the child would sign a halachic shtar selling their property to a third party, and I say halachic shtar because they wouldn't be able to sign a legal shtar because they don't have the title in their name. The property is not registered in their name, so they wouldn't be able to transfer it legally. But if, let's say, they would do a kinyan where they would transfer the property to somebody else, and they would receive the value of the house, it's understood between all the parties that the 800,000, which is owed to the bank, still has to be paid. The child can't turn around and say, that's got nothing to do with me, this house is mine. So it's understood that the parents, when they borrowed the mortgage, 800,000, have lent it to their children. And the children have to pay it back. That being the case, says the Gemara, Shulchan Aruch, that being the case, the children are not allowed to pay back a penny more than what they borrowed. They borrowed 800,000, they can only pay back 800,000. Which means, every month's mortgage payment, if that is made by the children, then that is ribis. Pashtus according to Moshitas, that's ribis deiraisa. Every single month. And the Gemara says, a person lends with ribis, then that can result in a downturn in a person's financial fortunes. And people run for skulas and brachos and other things, looking for a desperate solution, how they can improve their panosa. And sometimes on a monthly basis, there's a standing order where payments going out from the bank. The lova's over, and sometimes, we've mentioned this before, to parents, they say, ooh, I have to tell my child. In fact, the malva, the parent is over double the amount of lavim which the child is over. Yes?
Does it apply to a husband and wife, or just one and no,
that's a very good shayla. Let's leave that for now. That there's a shayla whether one can say ishtu kikufi, when that would work, how that would work. It's a very good shayla, and it's quite a frequent thing. Let's leave that for now. But what it definitely does apply to is between children and parents. And I've seen this happening both ways. I've seen it happening with children who aren't purchasing a property in their name, and therefore the parents or uncle or cousin, whoever it might be, purchase it in their name. And I've also seen it happening the other way around, where parents are purchasing properties in their children's names, for whatever reasons that might be, and that might happen. And that also has exactly the same point. The mentality is that the people look at it as, you know, let's say a parent purchasing a property in their child's name. I'm buying the property, I'm borrowing the money. It's a technicality, we're just using that name. But really, I'm the one doing everything. I'm paying the money, I'm paying the mortgage. So what should be the problem? And the answer is, al pi halacha, the person whose name is on the loan is the person who is personally liable, assuming that there is personal liability. That's what we're talking about. So they are the one borrowing the money, and they are in turn lending on the money. And that is the problem, and it's every single month the payment is a problem. Now this could be sorted out from the beginning and structured in a way where it's not a problem, but often people don't think to ask. That's number one.
To whom does the payment go? The bank?
The bank. If I borrow £1,000 from you, and you tell me, until I pay back that £1,000, I have to pay your electricity bill. Direct to the electric company. Is that a problem or not a problem? It's a problem. It's mafurish.
If the child,
it's a problem. It's a problem, right? Because the ribis doesn't have to be paid to the malva. The malva can designate an address where he wants the ribis to be paid, and that's still ribis. So here, the father is saying, you have to pay the mortgage, because I'm doing this as a tova for you. But at the end of the day, that means the father has an interest bill, he has to pay the bank. Again, let me be clear. We're not denying the fact that the parent is doing this as a tova to the child, and the parent is gaining nothing financially from this whole deal. On the contrary, it probably affects his credit rating or whatever. He's not gaining anything. He's borrowing, and he's literally passing on the interest charge from the bank to the child. He's not gaining a penny. And nevertheless, it's awesome.
If the arvut to the bank by the father...
Arvut is a separate child.
And the child backs it up. Investing in saying he is responsible, that helps.
Are you talking about this scenario or a different scenario?
This scenario.
This scenario, what do you mean?
The problem is because it's on his name, but the child signs another form investing to cover it.
No, on the contrary, all the child is doing is saying, I guarantee to pay back the money which you're paying. Yes. We know that. Even without the child signing anything, the parent's borrowing from the bank and lending to the child. So the child owes that money to the parent. That doesn't help. Well, the problem is, at the end of the day, the parent is lending the child, and therefore the child can't pay back anything more than what they borrowed. Let me move on to the next case. The next case is so common, it's incredible. I've given shurim and shurim and shurim to people who've been in those shurim and then done this without realizing it's meister b'chol yom. Anyone who rents a property needs to check the rental contract, because min hastam, the rental contract will have in it a late payment interest charge. Right, they're all there, downloaded from the internet, wherever it is, non-stop between. And you can have very firm landlords, and you might think, therefore, I don't have to have a half a minute. You need to check the rental contract. Invariably, 80, 90% of the time, there will be an interest clause in there. And when I say 90%, there only won't be if it's been taken out. Min hastam, every single rental contract has in there as standard that there'll be a late payment interest charge. That is a shtar shiesh beribis. There could be grounds for actually having to tear up the actual lease, which no one wants to be in that situation afterwards. So one needs to check at the beginning that that shouldn't be there. If that is there, then there are two ways to remedy it. The simplest is if both parties agree to take it out, but often the landlord won't agree to take it out because he wants to make sure the rent is paid. And if that is the case, one is allowed, because this is a rental contract, this is not a halvor, it's rental. So the rent which is owed because of a rental agreement. It's not owed because money was borrowed. The difference is that therefore, if there's a problem of interest of ribis, it's ribis drabonon, not ribis deraisa. For ribis deraisa, something has to originate as a loan or be transferred into a loan. So here, because it originated as a rental agreement, it's ribis drabonon. And on ribis drabonon, Chazal were a bit more lenient, and they allowed a one-off penalty charge. You can't have an increasing penalty charge, but you can have a one-off penalty charge for each month's interest. So that means if January's rent is paid late, then you can have a one-off penalty for January's rent. You cannot have a second penalty. You can have again another one-off penalty on February's rent. That's a different allocation. It's a different amount of money, coming for a different month, and you can have another one-off penalty for each month's rent. The problem is, once January has come and the one-off penalty has been invoked, there's nothing to incentivize the tenant to pay January's rent. He might be in a rush to pay February's rent on time because he doesn't want another penalty for February, but there's no penalty anymore in January. So for that, we add a clause into the contract. And the clause says, any monies paid are taken for monies which are most in arrears. Which means that the tenant cannot pay February's rent before he's paid January's rent and the interest on January's rent. Right? So now we're not making a second penalty on January's rent, but we're saying when you pay money, that will not be taken for February. Even if you specifically say this should be for February, it's not for February. It's for January and then the interest of January, or the penalty of January. So that way, it's not necessarily as effective as having a regular increasing interest penalty clause, but that's a method which works al pi halacha. So again, if any of you have children or whatever it might be who are renting properties, you need to go and look at those contracts, and you need to be aware before you sign the rental contract that this is going to be in there unless it's been removed. The third one, which happens depending which kinds of methods of business you're involved in, is when it comes to investments. Now, something which one has to be aware of is that the classification which something is given is not necessarily the way that the halacha classifies it. So therefore, something which is called an investment in halacha, from a legal point of view, might well be called a loan from a halachic point of view, and sometimes vice versa, something which is called a loan sometimes actually turns out not to be called a halvor from a halachic point of view. Let's see if we can run through an example of each of those. Something which is called an investment from a halachic point, from a legal point of view. If I invest with you, let's say the other way around, if you invest with me, right, I come to you, I've got an exceptional deal, it's going to be amazing, and your main focus should be on what you're going to do with the profits. Right? We're all very optimistic people, and we're going to invest, and we're going to make me matzliach, and what do we do with the profits? Sometimes, I'm so desperate for the funds, or I need to incentivize you to invest to such an extent that I turn around and I guarantee your capital. I guarantee your capital. It happens. Sometimes I guarantee it outright, and sometimes I don't guarantee it outright. I give you a preferential return, which means I've got funds in the business. You are going to put funds into the business. You will take out your capital before I take out my capital, which means that effectively my capital is on the line for your funds. Priority return. Now, assuming that one doesn't hold of Rav Moshe's famous psak, who holds that as long as the borrower is a limited company, then there's no problem of ribis, which we haven't got time to do now. We've covered it before a number of times in Shurim. But many, many poskim do not go with this approach. So in this situation, even though I personally might not be liable for the funds, but the money which I have put into the company is on the line because you have a preferred return. So in those situations, the key words which you need to look out for is liability. Does the person receiving the funds have liability for those funds? If I am liable for your funds, so let's pick the more extreme example. If I have accepted full, personally underwritten the investment, then the halacha looks at it that this is not a loan. This is not an investment, this is a loan. The main difference when you want to classify something as either a loan or an investment is liability. If I'm investing with you as a shutuf, that means I'm with you for the up and I'm with you for the down. If we make profits, we're going to split them however we've determined. If we make losses, we're going to split them however we've determined. And Shalom Ali Yisrael. But if I am going to guarantee your capital that no matter what happens, you are going to receive back your capital, no matter what happens, that is a loan. That's a loan. And as a result of that, you will get your capital back, assuming I'll be able to pay it back personally, but you cannot take a penny of profit. And I think we mentioned a number of years ago, a Shaila Maisa Shoyo here that happens in London, where a person came along and made a huge investment, a number of millions of pounds, and they actually asked the Shaila at the time, but they didn't, you know, it was one of these after shul Shailas. You know, if I just ask you quickly, I spent months with my lawyers, my accountants and everything, but I'll come to the Rav for 2 minutes. And they asked the Rav very briefly the Shaila, and they said, I'm receiving an investment and we're splitting the profits 50-50, is there a problem? No, it shouldn't be a problem. But they'd phrase it that way. The key question hadn't been asked. I'm receiving an investment, but I've underwritten the capital. Personally underwritten the capital. And the person had personally underwritten the capital, and because it underwritten the capital, it became a loan, which meant this investment was actually very much liak, and the investor wasn't able to take a penny of profits. Because at the end of the day, it was a loan. So his capital was guaranteed, but he can't take a penny of profits, because that'll be ribbis. And again, that would have been easily sorted out had it been structured properly from the beginning, but nobody thought it's a problem of ribbis because it's an investment. So that's when an investment can become a loan. What about the other way around? Somebody came with a shayla, I'm going to change some of the details, but the nekudas are the same nekudas. Somebody came and said like this, more or less like this. They offer a financing service. A financing service, if you want to buy, let's say, a yacht, right? You want to buy a yacht. So you come to me and you want to buy a yacht. So you tell me the yacht you want to buy. These are the words of the shayla, more or less. I'm going to finance the yacht and you're going to make capital repayments, you're going to make interest repayments, and until the end of the deal. On the surface, Mamish Glatribis. Glatribis, he's using the word finance, he's lending, there's going to be interest charge. It's a problem of ribis. So the Shiloh, which was asked, is, you know, talk me through the story. Let's say, you know, for a minute I allowed myself to imagine I'm going out and buying a yacht, right? So I'm buying a yacht, so I come to you, I say, I'd like to buy a yacht. Can you talk, you know, what happens? So he said, I go and pick the exact, you know, I pick the yacht which I want. His company, the financing company, will go and purchase that yacht. So I said, 1 minute, so who has title of the yacht? Says the finance company. Let's be clear. This is not like a charge which a bank can put on a property. The finance company have title of the yacht. Legally, it is 100% theirs. I make regular payments. Well, I receive the yacht straight away. I'm using the yacht, I'm sailing off into the sunset. And I make regular payments for this yacht. At the end of the term, when I've paid all the capital and interest, there's one final payment of £300, a nominal payment, in the grand scheme of things. I make one final payment of £300, and then the title is transferred to me. Now, from a halachic point of view, this is something which is faket. I was actually very misspelled. So finally have a case. People have accused me of having ribbis on my glasses. Finally have a case, I could turn around and say, there's no problem at all. No problem at all. Why is there no problem at all? Because again, he's calling it financing. He's calling it lending with interest. He's actually not lending a penny. Why is he not lending a penny? Because he is buying the yacht. He is buying the yacht. He's charging maybe exorbitant rent. But until the end of the term, nothing has been lent to the person who's coming to purchase it, right? So me, I'm coming to purchase it from you. You own the yacht the entire time. I'm making payments, which you could call rent if you want, till the end. And at the end, I have a right to pay that final payment, and it will become mine. In fact, he rammed it home with a very good legal point. He said a number of months ago, one of the customers, one of the clients, was Nifta, unfortunately, and the payment stopped. So the company went and took back the yacht, but they didn't have to wait for probate. Normally, if a person's got a claim from an estate and someone's Nifta, then you have to wait for probate to be sorted before you can touch anything in the estate. Here they didn't have to wait for probate. Why not have to wait for probate? Because it's theirs. It's their yacht. He's sailing their yacht, and as long as he makes the payments, they're allowed to prepare to let him continue sailing the yacht. But in the end of the day, it's theirs. So there was no halvor. Now, there is a similar shaila, which works the other way, which is a problem. We've discussed this before. I called it the washing machine shaila, which the Gemara calls tarsha. Right? The washing machine shaila is, I walk into a store to buy a washing machine. I'm going to take it home. They're going to deliver it this week. Right? And I go and say, how much is the washing machine? And they've got a sign up saying, £500, 12 months interest free. So like a good yid, I say to them, and how much if I pay today? And they tell me, you pay today, £350. Say, £350? Say, £350. You know what? Let's say I want to pay today. Fine. They say, you know, if you pay today, £450. £450? No. I'll pay in 12 months. No. That option is no longer available al pi halacha. Why? Because the genuine price of an item is the price on the day when you take possession of it. By Mekach HaMemcha, that's a Mishnah, the genuine price is the day when you receive it, when you take possession. That's when it becomes yours. That's the real price. So really what they're saying is, the real price is 450. If you want to pay in 12 months' time, 500. So that means you're charging £50 for 12 months' interest. That's 12 months' interest is £50. It's a high rate, 10% on your thing, but that's what you're charging. So when you say the washing machine costs £500, because it's not clear that you're charging more because of the 12 months, it's not a problem. Because nowadays, especially, this was true in the time of the Gemara, it's definitely even more pertinent nowadays, where it's impossible to work out the price of something, the market price, because you know that there's overheads, there's different issues. Everyone understands a can of Coke in Tesco costs less than a can of Coke in Harrods. You know, every shop and every area and every... So you see a washing machine, £500, you might be able to buy it cheaper online, but that's not a riot because online is always cheaper. So it's not nikka me'elov, it's not apparent that you're being charged more because of the fact that you're being given 12 months interest free. However, when he turns around and crystallizes that by telling you, if you pay today, it's 450, then what he's in fact telling you is the real price is 450. The moment he's clarified that the real price is 450, that option of paying 500 12 months later is off the table. That's no longer an option. So you don't always gain by, you know, it's a judgment call whether you want to ask that question. So that is where there's two different prices if you pay today or you pay later. So you might think in this situation with a yacht, there's no question. There's no question that the gentleman who pays in this finance situation is going to pay more over the course of the plan than he would have paid if he paid today. So why isn't there a problem? And the answer is, because in the case of the washing machine is mine on the date when I receive it. I bought it today. If I bought it today, then really I should be paying today. So why, if I pay later, am I paying more? Because he's lending me the money. He's giving me a line of credit which he's charging for. In the case of the yacht, which we're talking about, he's not giving me that yacht. That yacht is his. He's allowing me to use that yacht, and I'm paying a very high price for it. And the reason I'm paying more than the regular rent is because at the end, I'll have an option to purchase. I'll be able to purchase it if I want at the end. So it's worth my while. I'm prepared to pay a higher rent if at the end I can make it mine. But in the end of the day, I think this is called lease purchase. I think is the official term for this situation. But in the end of the day, there's no halvor at all. There is no halvor, because legally it's not mine, so therefore I don't owe him a penny. He hasn't lent me any money, and therefore in this situation actually something was classified in the shaila as a halvor with interest, and it's not halvor at all, and there's no problem at all.
Early bird discount. I think Bob mentioned it a couple of years ago.
Correct. We mentioned that before, early bird discount. Early bird discount depends on a number of different factors, but often is a shaila. Often it is a shaila, and there, that's the reverse of the washing machine. Why? In the washing machine, we're paying today is one price, you pay later is a more expensive price. With the early bird discount, let's say the washing machine. Let's say I go into the shop and I'd say, you're getting the machine in, you know, it's coming in 6 months' time. If I pay today, will I get it cheaper? Right? So if you pay in advance of when you receive it, you get it cheaper. That can also be a problem. The Gemara says there are a number of different halachas which could affect that. For example, if Yeshlei, if he actually has the washing machine today, and I'm paying him today, but I'm only taking receipts of it in a few months' time, or whatever, for whatever reason that would be, so then really we could say it's like I'm buying it today for a cheaper price. There's nothing wrong with that. But the problem where that can arise is, as you say, early bird specials, or you're paying in advance, and they clearly write. So again, if they wouldn't write the two prices, so this is what they charge. But when they write, if you pay today, it's a cheaper price. If you pay later, it's a more expensive price. That often can be a problem, depending on what it's for. You can't go through all the kladim now. But one area how one could remove that problem is if they're not actually using the funds. So if there's an agreement that they can't use the funds, the reason why they're giving this reduction for the early bird special is because they want the peace of mind and the security to know they can go ahead with the camp or whatever it is that they're doing, but they're not going to actually use the funds. If they're not using the funds, what should be the problem with early bird special? The problem is you are fronting the money earlier than you're really mechuyev to pay. Really you're mechuyev to pay on the day when it starts or the day when it ends, rent, skewers, whatever, and you're giving to them in advance. So really you're lending the money in advance, and because you're lending the money, they're giving you a reduction on the official price, right? If you're not lending them that money because they can't use that money, then you haven't got a problem. But the reality is, often, they want to use that money. In fact, the reason they're giving the early bird special isn't necessarily because of this peace of mind, it's because they've got a cash flow problem. They need to already go ahead and purchase things for the camp or whatever it might be, and they can't wait till the day where camp starts to receive the funds. And the way that the poskim look at this is, how much are you being asked to pay? If you're being asked to pay a deposit, right? So normally the deposit is meramas, it shows that it's just been given to know peace of mind you're coming and you put it down and that's shon money swol. When you're being asked to pay the entire amount up front, then normally that's not being done for security. That's being done because they taka need the funds. If they need the funds, then often it can be a problem. I'm being a bit cagey because it depends exactly what it's for. There could be a difference between subscriptions and camps and different things, that different situations. But it's definitely a shayla which needs to be asked.
In business, usually, when you sell textiles, and it's written, payment 90 days, if you pay cash, deduction from both services.
Let's leave that shayla for now. There are a few different angles to that shayla.
All the business works like that.
Yeah.
They often advertise things like halamoid outings, where they say, you know, if you book in advance, then you pay so much, and if you turn up on the day, then you pay more.
That could be a shayla. Depends on a few different angles. I'm leaving that because a few. If I answer that, I won't be answering it properly, and then someone might listen to it and think I've answered the shayla. There's a few angles on that. Another situation which comes up, which is very similar to the mortgage shayla, which we discussed, is credit cards. Right, credit cards, if somebody purchases something on a credit card for somebody else, exactly the same principle as the mortgage shayla. Right, so I'm going shopping, I offer to get something for you, you know, maybe I'm getting something for myself as well, or just for you, whatever it might be, and I purchase it on the credit card, and there's going to be an interest charge. Now, whether that's because there's an interest charge immediately or that's because you didn't pay the money in time and therefore then the credit card charge interest, you are not allowed to pay me that interest charge, which is a tough one because ultimately I'm doing you a favor here and you definitely don't want me to be out of pocket for doing you a favor. So if it's only interest charge, if the payment's not made on time, make sure the payment's made on time. But the nekuda is exactly the same nekuda. When I spend on my credit card, I'm borrowing from the bank. And I'm borrowing and then lending you. When did I lend you? When I spent the money which I borrowed from the bank on purchasing an item for you. Now, that happens in one transaction, so you don't actually see borrowing, lending. But that's exactly the same as a property. And in that case, you can't pay me back more than what I actually borrowed from the bank, which is what I spent on the card. So any interest which is charged above that, you're not allowed to pay.
He's a second card holder. But you're...
No, so then he's not borrowing and lending to you. You're both borrowing. He's not liable, or second card holder not liable? Depending, okay, there are different ways. So then they're the same thing. We've got 1 minute.
When you buy with the credit card, they tell you if you pay with American Express, you charge 2% more than
that's a cost. They charge more for the cost, not so much for the lending. That's already a different nekuda. I wanted one more point. We've got literally 1 minute. I've only said 1 minute. Now, this is not possible to do in 1 minute, but I'm going to do it in any case. We had Shia on this actually not so long ago. We learned this together. And that's when it comes to Hetzer Iskus. So everything we've discussed till now has highlighted often the need for remedies. But sometimes those remedies aren't conducted properly. So the most frequent remedy for most of these shaylos is a Hetzer Iska. We haven't got time now possibly to go through Hetzer Iska properly. We've done that before, I think, a number of times. But one of the most frequent areas where people are over on the Issa is when they get a Hetzer Iska from a Rav or from a Bezdin, and it's more or less all filled out, it's just missing a couple of gaps, and they think therefore it should be fine. And then they fill in those gaps themselves, and then they end up at Din Torah later on, and they're not able to claim with a Hetzer Iska. And the reason why is because the percentages which are put into the Hetzer Iska can be too high for the actual Iska involved. It could be more than an accepted rate. I'm again not doing justice to this because we haven't got time to do it properly now. We have done it before, but just as a final point to think of is that even when one's doing a Hetzer Iska, one has to ask a Rav or someone equipped to discuss the Shaila to make sure that it's being done in a way which works properly.